Hello, welcome to this bonus episode of Football the Albion and Me. I'm Richard Newman. Brighton and Hove Albion finally made their return to action following the coronavirus break this weekend with a brilliant 2-1 win over Arsenal to ease those relegation worries. What a move that was for Neil Mopey's winner. Now, as a sports radio journalist, I'm incredibly fortunate to cover sporting events, and that included this game at the Amex, and I know how lucky I was to be there. But of course, things are now very different. So I thought I'd take you behind the scenes of the new strange quirks of attending a behind-closed-doors match during a pandemic, coming up as a sort of diary of the day, and finish by a discussion with Brian Owen from the Argus on just how weird it all was. Enjoy.
Okay, so first diary entry of the day. It's 7 a.m. Been up a lot longer than that. I'd like to say that's because I'm too excited about Albion's first game in over 3 months, but really it's because of my 6.5-month-old baby. But yeah, really looking forward to it today. It does feel a bit odd though. Something definitely sort of holding me back from all the usual excitement about covering the game, because it will literally be sanitized. So first job then, I've been working on my match notes over the past few days. So first things first will be to go over that, make sure I've not missed anything, and go over the papers over breakfast. Okay, so my preview's written and I'm pretty happy with my notes and where they're at, and we'll come to that a little bit later on. But I just want to take you through the documents that all media before the Premier League restarted were sent this week. Now, this is the separate protocols, basically, that every Premier League club has to prepare. The full protocol for Brighton Hove Albion is 135 pages long, which really does just show you the amount of detail that they need to go into to make this all really safe for everyone, so that we can watch these games on TV, these behind closed doors games. Around 300 people will be allowed at the stadium, at each stadium. Now, there's a media version for this protocol, which is only 7 pages long, which is a lot better. But I have actually had to go through that 135-page document and just have a look through it. Now, each Premier League ground is separated into three zones of accreditation during this pandemic. You can basically look at that as red. That's the pitch, dressing rooms, technical areas. So that's restricted to players and the coaching staff and medical staff and people like that. Then there's the amber zone. So that's in the stands, and that's where the media will be. So that's one of the areas that I'll be sitting in later. And then there's green, which is the concourses, as I understand it, the areas around the stadium as well. So that might be security staff and people like that. The other thing I need to do is complete a medical questionnaire, which was sent. And if this is not completed, you can't gain access to the stadium. So, yeah, really important that that's done. Now, in this, it starts by asking if you're currently experiencing symptoms like a high temperature, a new continuous cough, a loss of change to smell or taste. So all the things that the government asks us to look out for. And if you are showing any of those, you won't be allowed into the stadium. Then there's a very long questionnaire just asking about medical conditions and things like that. And then you have to sign a disclosure at the end. That will have to be passed over before I'm allowed to collect my accreditation. So I'm just going through that and making sure it's all completed now. Next thing to do is check the kit. And I haven't used this since the Palace game, which was the end of February, 29th of February. So hoping everything's still all right. Just to describe the kit for you, it's sort of a black box. It's called an ISDN kit. So it's you might have seen other reporters and pundits pop it on Twitter and stuff like that. I'll put some pictures up on the Footy Albion Me Twitter account throughout the day so you can see what it's all about. But basically, it's a very old-looking box. It even rattles, which I'm sure it shouldn't be. Mainly battery-operated, because my seat at the Amex is open to the elements as well. So I've had a few near misses with this box, and a few concerns that it's gonna pack up on me midway through a broadcast. So I'm just going to go through all the checks now. And that means checking batteries, making sure I've got my right leads and my microphone,
my laptop and all the bits and pieces I need. But that's quite exciting. I think this is the bit where I start feeling a little bit more excited now, when I'm putting the kit back together and basically taking everything out of my rucksack and putting it all back in again. Now it starts to feel a little bit more real. This is one thing that won't change today. It's the paranoia that I've forgotten something and the realization that in the end I probably have. One of the things I need to do before going to the game is to record my preview piece. So that's a bit different, because you usually wouldn't do this until you get to a ground. But my access is now restricted to 90 minutes before kickoff, and radio stations often need this preview piece before then. So at the game, I'll primarily be working for Sky News Radio IRN, and that's basically where I used to be sports editor and I now freelance for them. To summarise, they provide the national news and sport to UK commercial radio. So when you're listening to bulletins, those written stories and audio, we actually record the bulletins ourselves as well, provide packages and provide live reports at sporting events too. I'll also be on the RTE sports show in Ireland. If you don't know, that's sort of Ireland's equivalent to the BBC. So this is my preview. And remember, I have to be neutral for this. Attention Network, Attention Network. This is Richard Newman reporting ahead of the Brighton against Arsenal game in the Premier League. This is your preview piece. Have your preview piece for you, and it comes to you in 3, 2, and 1. In these odd times of behind closed doors fixtures, a moment of history this afternoon as Brighton and Hove Albion's game with Arsenal becomes the first Saturday 3pm Premier League match to be shown live on television in the UK, a slot usually denied due to the 3pm blackout rules which date back to the 60s. On the pitch, Arsenal will be hoping to recover from a disappointing return to action, a 3-0 defeat at Manchester City where David Luiz had a nightmare and was sent off. But with a match behind them, it could give an advantage over relegation threatened Brighton, who resume after the coronavirus break 2 points above the drop zone and without a win in 2020. No fans at the Amex, but cardboard cutouts replace them. It's Brighton against Arsenal. Right, well, I'm ready to go. All the checks are done. Got all the equipment, I think. About to make the journey, short journey, to the Amex. Okay, so I'm on the A27, recording this hands-free, of course. And I'm just coming up to the junction to come off for the Amex. Already it's kind of strange, because when you're doing this most days, when you're covering a match, there would obviously be the huge queue on the slip road. Yeah, just a strange kind of feeling. There are a couple of police cars around the station where they usually would be. Just seeing on my left some cameramen just wandering up from, I guess, maybe the train station or the University of Sussex car parks. And this is where it's going to be a bit strange, because every member of the media, everyone attending the game, must be given a car parking space. The idea is to limit public transport as much as possible. So that was explicitly stated on the protocol regulations. So in a minute, I'm going to drive onto Village Way, and that's where I'll be given my accreditation. It's also where I'll have to give in my questionnaire, and I'll have my temperature checked too. So this is the big moment. I did check my temperature before I came out just to make sure. Should all go fine. Okay, so about to drive into Village Way. And this is where I'll be met by a security guard, and we'll see what happens here. Here we go. Right, so that was really well organised. Had my temperature checked, picked up my accreditation, I've got my pack. In my pack is my usual match day accreditation. Says the amber zone access, which is what I was talking about a little bit earlier on, and my ticket with my seat number on it. I've also got a face mask, which I've been told to put on as soon as I get out, and a Brighton Hove Albion branded face mask as well. I'm not sure whether to wear that one or wear the other one, but there's a normal face mask in there too, and then a copy of the match day protocol as well. So I'm about to get out of the car, and we'll see where we go from here. Right, so I'm walking to gate 20 to go into my seat. I went for the Albion face mask. Again, pictures on social media, I think. Most of the time I wear glasses, so my glasses are steaming up all the time. Now, the regulation is that you have to wear your mask at all times unless you're doing a report. So I have to wear this mask all the time, unless I'm doing one of my radio reports. I can take it off briefly and put it back on again, but I must put it back on again. So just heading towards gate 20 now, and that's when I'll be showing to my seat. Now, I'm not permitted to record for the podcast inside the stadium due to rights issues, but at the end of the game, Brian Owen from the Argus will join me to go over how it all was. Well, it's about an hour after the full-time whistle and after that, well, ridiculous end, Neil Mopay's winning goal to get Brighton the 2-1 win over Arsenal. And I'm joined by Brian Owen from the Argus. Brian, I mean, what an end to that game.
It was, wasn't it? And it was good, but it was all a bittersweet a little bit as well, because just imagine that in front of a packed Amex. But it was just what Brighton needed, and a bit of a reward, I suppose, for having to put McAllister on and had the two up front. And I sort of asked Graham Potter about that, but he wasn't really taking so much credit for it. But a fantastic finish and a bit fiery at the end as well, wasn't it? But exactly what was required, and a day of lots of unexpected things, and a day of going into the unknown a little bit.
Yeah, I think we'll talk about that in a minute. I think that was the best Premier League game since the restart, don't you? Just for entertainment value, it was, the second half was really good.
Probably was. There was a lot going on. There were some moments we had, obviously Brighton had a lot of defending to do, and there were some moments where Adam Webster scored at the Emirates, but just as precious probably today with that challenge he made. Davey proper throwing himself at a shot. Some chances for Brighton as well, and they had their moments going forward in the first half, had a few corners and a few little moments there. The Aaron Moy shot that the keeper saved, and of course the goalkeeping mishap that Arsenal had, which was a big source of a talking point afterwards. But yeah, I thought it was a decent game. I've only seen two all the way through since the restart. There was the Villa one, which was quite dull, and the Man City one, which probably was better than it looked because of the surroundings and the lack of noise, and the commentators sound a little bit bored. It was probably a better game than it actually looked. But yeah, that's hard to judge, isn't it, when you've got an interest in the game compared to a game you haven't got so much invested in. But that must have been quite a decent, you know, 3 p.m. Saturday afternoon.
Yeah, should we quickly talk about one of the main incidents from that, which was like you said, the Bernd Leno challenge with Mopay, and that what looks like a pretty horrific injury. But Leno was very much putting the blame at Mopay, and it seems that the Arsenal players were not particularly happy with him at the end either. There's footage where it seemed to show Guendouzi grabbing Mopay's throat as well, isn't there? What the manager said after the match?
They didn't really attach much any blame to Mopay, and that includes Arteta, who seemed to attach more blame to his players for their reaction. So, I mean, I quite like Arteta, actually. I think he comes across quite well. I've only ever seen him speaking after defeats, and he does come across quite well and quite level-headed and quite reasonable. I don't think anybody, certainly Graham Potter, wasn't blaming Mope. It was actually asked, because Mope said he went in at half-time to apologise, and Potter was actually asked, did he really need to go in and apologise? But no, Arteta was... He didn't lay any sort of blame at him at all. They said it was an accident, and obviously an awkward fall as much as anything. It wasn't, for example, when Arsenal came here 2 years ago and Kolasinac absolutely flattened Scalotto. It wasn't one of those, as far as I could see. It was the fall. So no, there wasn't. Certainly not that was said on the record in the press conference. There were no accusations or towards my pay.
We're talking before Bournemouth play West Ham. So at this point, Albion are 5 points above the relegation zone. I mean, that's a huge step forward, isn't it, towards safety? You've got to feel that, because this, I guess fans would have looked at this as a bit of a bonus game. I mean, you've got Norwich coming up, Leicester away next week as well. It's a big step, isn't it, towards safety?
There is. I just wonder whether... especially from Wednesday, with what happened to Arsenal at Man City, and I know it was Man City and teams do lose 3-0 at Man City, but all those mishaps, and Arsenal have come here and they've lost a couple of years ago, they've drawn having been ahead last season, so I think there was a little bit of hope, and I certainly had hope that they could win this. But as I was saying to you beforehand, that I was sort of brought back to reality by that superb goal from Nicola Pepe, and then we thought that you know, maybe it wasn't going to be on this occasion. So, but it is a huge win and a double over Arsenal, a first one. But I think from when we saw, and we've seen like Chelsea in the past being in a little bit disarray coming here, but it hasn't actually affected them. But I think probably hope started to flicker more after seeing what happened to Arsenal in terms of the two injuries. I know there was jokes about David Luiz, but that they were suddenly on the back foot again.
Yeah, and the first win of 2020, some momentum to take forward there as well. Let's talk about the experience today. Obviously, completely different to anything we've ever experienced before. So when you go into the stadium, obviously, it sort of felt kind of normal, as it does when we come to these games, because there's no crowds in. We get to go in before the crowds are there anyway. And so the start of it felt kind of normal. And then from there, it just felt a bit strange at the start, didn't it?
I thought actually getting here felt abnormal. It actually felt
getting
a little
here did, definitely.
Yeah, it felt a bit to me, and I put it on Twitter and somebody tried to claim I was taking credit for the win. It felt to me like the first game here against Doncaster, in that you knew where you were going, but you didn't know exactly where you were going. You didn't know exactly how it was going to work. There was that, the weather is obviously the same. I really had a very sort of similar feelings to coming here that time, not being a little bit unsure and obviously hoping your temperature's okay and all that sort of thing. But I thought it was going to be a little bit complicated coming in. I wondered how it was going to work.
Yeah.
But it was very efficient. I thought it was really good. And what I also liked was that everybody was sort of chatty and friendly, because it could be a little bit of a tense sort of feeling where you're being checked and you're having your questionnaire gone through, and everybody's a little bit on edge, especially for the first one. And I remember even the first time here at the Amex, you've got the feeling that staff were a little bit nervous and a bit on edge, and it was all new. But I thought that there was the practicalities of it, the organisation, which you'd expect to be spot on, it was, but also just the sort of the attitude of the people as you came through. It sort of put you at ease, and there was, you know, a little friend smiling, the joke and all that sort of thing. I thought that was really good. And then, as you say, there's that part when you're in the stadium and the players are warming up and there's no crowd and there's the music sort of echoing around the stands, and that was just the same as ever. But I mean, personally speaking, it was very different, because I was sitting up in the back row as opposed to normally just above the tunnel. So that's obviously as a result of coronavirus, as an indirect result of coronavirus. My colleague, who normally does certain things, is on furlough, so I was doing his job.
Right.
So it was all different, all related to what's happened in the last 3 months. So the whole thing was a whole new experience, and it just reminded me of, in some ways, of that first time at the Amex, even before they scored in the 90 whatever minute.
The organisation actually was brilliant. Like you say, I thought it was going to be a bit complicated when we came in, but actually it's all really well set up. So you drive in, you go to several different sort of canopy areas, your car gets checked, and then you go in and get your temperature checked, and like you said, everyone was really, really friendly. I just thought it worked really well today, and I think it could have been, that was what I was nervous about today. From my experience, I was sitting in the area that I usually would sit, but in a different seat, so that was a bit disorientating. So again, that's a similar area to what you're talking about. It's next to the tunnel. What was really weird for me was that there's no sound in the stadium, and the substitutes have to be spread out, and they have allotted seats with bibs on them where they have to sit. And there was my seat was literally, it was just 2 meters away from Aaron Connolly, and there were no. And McAllister also was just in front of me as well. So you're trying to do your reports and you're trying to analyse the game on national radio, but at the same time, they can hear everything you're saying, and that's completely odd. And there was one of our broadcasting colleagues, a different outlet, I won't say which ones they were, but there was an occasion where one said pundit, then made a comment about like how Albion should be getting the ball up more to Dan Byrne or something like that, and Aaron Connolly's turn and look at this pundit, and that was really early on, and I was really concerned then about, I was really on my guard, and I had to just every time I was just waiting for Connolly to go and warm up just so I have a little bit. It was just a really strange feeling, because I felt like I wasn't caught up in the atmosphere. But then as I said earlier on, I thought that was a really entertaining second half, and I wasn't sure you could get that momentum from a game with no crowd. No. But actually, I was really impressed, and I think everyone from the broadcasting sense sort of actually forgot where they were. There were still people inside the ground. Yeah. I think there was a couple of youth team players there, and players on the fringes, enough staff there to be cheering on. Mm. Bruno was loud enough.
Because okay, that roof, it does echo around. I can remember even coming to the ramp-up games. I think they played Eastbourne Borough in the Senior Cup, and the noise can sort of echo around that, and it can be louder than you think it is. Like I say, there seemed to be quite a lot of cheering, even though there weren't many people when they scored. Obviously, I've heard the replays back with the sound effects on that they do with the crowd sound on BT Sport, and obviously that sounds good. But Potter did say he could hear the media behind him, which was strange, but he didn't actually. I suppose he's got crowd behind him and they tell him, why don't you do this? But the other thing that struck me is how loud the sort of the howls were, mainly from the Arsenal team, to be honest, when there was fouls. Mm. And you don't notice that during the game. You see the arms go up and you see there's a reaction. But that was sort of very loud on some of those. So they weren't even given as fouls, some of the challenges. Mm. But, strange. We're going to get used to it, I suppose. But hopefully it's just for another four games.
Yeah, I think some of the players actually found that a bit odd when they could hear all the broadcasters behind them. But there was an occasion just after when they first sat down, they all sort of looked behind and were thinking, this is a bit strange that we can hear commentary of the match. And they sort of got used to it, I think. And then it happened again when Aaron Moy went off at half-time. He obviously had showered, came back in 10, 15 minutes later and looked completely bemused about what was going on behind him. So it's one of those things that, I don't know, I think you're quite close at the Amex. Like you say, it was a real shame that we didn't have fans here today. This place would be rocking, especially in this weather. I mean, this place would be rocking still now, wouldn't it?
Now, yeah. I mean, we're outside on the sort of the roadway that goes around the stadium, and people would be hanging on for the bars would be packed underneath the north stand and what have you. Nobody would be in a rush to go home. It'd be one of those where people are staying and having, as you know, the last couple of pints in the stadium and what have you. I mean, it was, it's a lonely experience a bit. So I didn't talk to anybody during a game. You just get there, you're in your seat. I think there was about four seats between me and the next person. And you just sit there and work. You don't go down for a cup of tea at half-time or whatever. And then you come out and you do the press conference sitting at your computer without going down. It's obviously in Zoom, which we're more than used to now. Maybe what you're saying about the players and the media, that might be reviewed, because it's until you do it, it's a little bit of trial and error, isn't it? Until you do it, you don't know exactly what it's going to be like. And I'm sure, what have they got now, 10 days till the next home game? I'm sure everything will be, they'll go over it like a fine tooth with a fine tooth comb. We had a little bit about whether the press conference was embargoed or not, and I obviously just had a message about that. It's going to be, and I can remember again going back to those first games at the Amex, the way they changed stuff so quickly to adapt to little observations that came in. They knocked up a new press conference room very quickly, because they'd started doing them in the press lounge, and that really wasn't, because it was a sort of a lounge but also a press conference, it didn't really work, and they thought it would, but they adapted so quickly to that. And maybe you'll find that, because the trouble is with yourselves, obviously, the reporters, if you're saying things that are annoying people, normally if you're saying things that you think are annoying people, you can be quiet or speak more quietly, but or shut up. But you obviously can't do that when you're doing
live broadcast. it's tricky.
So I'm sure things will be reviewed, and you never know, things might get changed by the time we come for the Manchester United game.
Yeah. Just finally, then, what do you think? I kind of thought that was the best of a bad situation that we're in. It was handled really well. Really well organised for the fact they'd never done that before. It was impeccably done. It was a good game, good spectacle. That's put my doubts to rest a little bit, because I just thought every game was going to be really pretty poor, to be honest. And then from a point of view, then we've also looking at the actual football as we should be, a brilliant result for the Albion. And going forward with some real momentum.
But just so much, I think, again, Potter mentioned it, a lot of sort of character and endeavour. A hot day, 1-0 down, you haven't got that crowd to drive you on, which I think they would have done. I think the Brighton fans haven't been probably at their best at times this season at the Amex, but I think these sort of games, they do stick with the team. And if they'd have seen signs of a recovery, they would have driven more, especially once Dunk had tackled the ball over the line for the equaliser.
But goal line technology did work today. Goal line technology did work today.
Yeah, but fortunately. But like you say, it was the best that it could have been, and it is a bit of history as well, wasn't it? I just hope people have been able to enjoy it because there will have been mixed feelings a little bit. If only you could have been there. Imagine that at the North Stand, those two goals, Mope running off like Buckley did in 2011, and a lot of fiery stuff as well, wasn't it? A bit bad tempered. It would have been. I just hope people can sort of put that to one side and just enjoy it as much as they can for what it, you know, for what it was in the end.
Yeah. Brian, thanks so much for taking the time to speak to me just after the game.
My pleasure.
So that's it for this bonus episode. A strange afternoon, but what a win. I hope it gave you some sort of insight into how things work. To see some photos, take a look on Twitter, @FootyAlbionMe. Do subscribe and review. We will return with our usual format on Wednesday. Thanks for listening.